I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. My guest today is Frode Midjord. Frode has been on a trip to the Baltic states, where he's been speaking and participating in nationalist events, and I wanted him to tell us all about it. So, Frode, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's always good to be on Countercurrents Radio. And as a matter of fact, I was just listening to your appearance on Mark Collett's show from yesterday.
Oh, good. I think that went well. I hope you think so, too.
Yeah, it was good. I was just having it, you know, it was running in the background while I was packing my things because I'm going on a trip. This is, unusually for me, this is actually family related. So I'm going on a trip tomorrow. But like, I'm traveling a lot, but all of it is related to metapolitical things, going to events and speaking and, you know, visiting events and organizing events. So
last year I went to Vilnius and Tallinn for conferences that were put on by basically ethno-nationalist youth groups and then also marches, Independence Day marches. They had torchlight marches. Their independence from the Russian Empire came 1 week apart, first in Lithuania and then in Estonia. So the Vilnius conference was very enjoyable, and I thought it was well organized. It was a small affair.
Mm-hmm.
How did it happen this year? What was your impression of it? Tell us the story.
The Baltic countries from north to south is Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Now, they have all obviously had like border conflicts with Russia and so on and the Soviet Union, and they have very large and sort of majestic celebrations and impressive celebrations of their independence days. And the Latvian, that is the country that is between Estonia and Lithuania, the Latvian Independence Day is in November. I've actually never been to the Latvian Independence Day, but they have the biggest of these torchlit marches. I think they have about 25,000 participants. And these marches are very nationalist. They're not apologetic about being nationalist because they know what it's all about to defend their own country and their own independence. So they very much celebrate it. The tradition with organizing these nationalist torchlit marches started in Latvia, and then it was taken up by Estonia. And that's only some 5-6 years ago. Like I said, Latvian one has like 25,000 people. And when the Estonians started, Ruben Kalep told me this, I think they started in 2014. And back then, they only had about 150 participants. And now they're up to about 10,000. Even more recently, it started in Lithuania. And they had about 2,000 when I participated now. So all these three countries have very big nationalist marches and nationalist celebrations. And the ones in Lithuania and in Estonia are just 1 week apart, just like you said. So this time I went to Lithuania. I started there. It's about 2 weeks ago. And I flew into Lithuania. I've never been to Vilnius before. It's always impressive to come to these countries because, first of all, they are de facto ethno-states. And I think in most of the cases, they are also explicitly ethno-states in their constitution. So their constitution describes the mission of the state, that the mission of the state is to preserve the ethnic heritage and cultural heritage of these peoples, the Estonian people or the Latvian people, for example. At least that's the case in Estonia and Latvia. I'm not sure about Lithuania. Anyhow, when you come there, you're just, you know, when you come from the West, and these are European countries, when you just come there from the West, and it's just across the water from from Sweden and Denmark and Germany, very close, but there is a very striking difference, and that is that you just see ethnic Lithuanians, basically. And if there are any strangers or, you know, ethnic aliens, they are at most, I don't know, Poles or Russians. So very mm-hmm. few non-whites.
To our eyes, they look pretty similar. Basically, it's just countries full of white people.
Yeah, And that's what I said this at both events, that that's why I'm so impressed and positively encouraged that they have strong metapolitical movements going, although they already have nation states and ethnostates, because that is why things went so bad for Sweden, for example, and for the rest of Western Europe, because those countries weren't intellectually prepared for subversion and for literally an invasion. They weren't prepared for that because they were politically naive in many ways, because they've had their ethnostates for so long and, yeah, been, you know, in border conflicts with neighboring countries and so on, but they weren't really prepared for what was coming when the leftist, this leftist march through the institutions subverted the countries completely and turned them now into situations where they are becoming minorities in their own homelands. So that's why I'm very positively encouraged by Lithuanians having already a metapolitical movement to build a strong nationalist foundation already before it's necessary, in a way, already before they have mass immigration. So I was invited to speak at this event organized by Kryptis. I think that's the pronunciation of the organization. And like you said, it's a rather small affair, but the immediate thing that you realize or notice when you're used to going to these events in the West is that the location was announced beforehand publicly, like in a Facebook event. So it was at a hotel, a conference venue in a hotel, in a central hotel in Vilnius. And we went there and I gave a speech about Might is Right, because well, really the reason why I wanted to talk about Might is Right is, well, the first reason is that it was recently republished in a new edition, so I had a chance to reread it after many years, and also because there has been there's this surge of humiliation crime, dominance crime. Have you heard about this, Greg? Dominance crime and humiliation crime in Scandinavia?
No, tell us a little bit about this.
So that is basically when immigrant groups attack Swedes and white people and just to assert their dominance, not to you know, take their money particularly or anything like that. It's mostly just attacking them with violence and humiliating them, urinating on them and so on, just to break their morale. And the reactions from Swedes they have often reacted by trying to appeal to pity, and that is something that really doesn't help us in these situations, because the people attacking Swedes, black people and people from Middle East and these migrants, they don't have the same social norms, so you can't really appeal to their pity. And that's why I thought it was relevant to start talking about, you know, we have to take back a form of assertiveness and a form of aggression in ourselves. That's why I wanted to talk about Might is Right. It's an attitude shift that's really needed.
Right. The Golden One has been talking about this very issue too.
Right. Yeah. He does a great job with that as well. Like you said, it was maybe 50 people at this event, but a lot of impressive people. One of them actually was a former American diplomat.
Yeah, that's interesting. So last year when I was there and Jared Taylor was there, there were maybe 25 people at the event. So it's doubled in a year, which doesn't surprise me. And that's very encouraging. I think I know this diplomat you're speaking about too. I thought he was a very impressive guy.
Exactly. And like you said, it's they started out with 25 people. Now there may be, you know, there were 50 people in the room. But you have to keep in mind that this is in a situation where a movement like that is not yet needed to the same extent that it is in the western parts of Europe, because the 2015 migration crisis just caused a lot of people to react against mass immigration. And before it really hits you, and before you are personally hit by the consequences, very few people are ready to react or to take any sort of preemptive measures to build a strong metapolitical movement. But that's what they've done, and that's what they are doing in Lithuania. So this guy Tomas Skorupkis, he was the organizer, and he was one of the speakers. Tiina Viik, who is from Finland, who does Happy Homelands together with Ramsey Paul, she was the speaker. And it was live streamed by her channel in Finland, so you can find a live stream of the conference. And also there was a speaker from Germany. And then the day after, we went to this torchlit march and marched with about 2,000 nationalists. And although Lithuania and Latvia and Estonia are ethnostates and they have a nationalist presence and a nationalism that is mainstream, they also have a liberal press. Somehow the mass media in all countries ends up being liberal. I don't know why, but so they have, you know, a liberal mass media that tries to portray these marches in a negative way. So, but the mass media wrote about it. It was a big thing, and there are many pictures of it. And, you know, they gave some speeches. I couldn't follow them because I don't understand the language. But the major, really major benefit of going to these events is to meet other people and network with them. So, you know, we went out to dinner with them afterwards, and we went to do some sightseeing. And these cities, Vilnius and Riga and Tallinn, they have these old towns, the old parts of the town that go back to the Middle Ages. And I think Lithuania is the last country in Europe to become Christian. I think that was in the 1380s, so almost in the 1400s. And they have a strong pagan religious spiritual movement that is very much alive today. So it's not really, I mean, it's not something that they had to sort of find their way back to. I think it has been something that has been sort of living under the surface there in a greater extent than in Western Europe, the pre-Christian traditions. So anyhow, then we went from Lithuania to Riga. We didn't participate in any nationalist events there, but it's on the way between Vilnius and Tallinn. So I drove up there together with Jonas Locka and Tiina Viik in their car, and together with a couple of friends. And we stopped in Riga for a couple of days just to check out the town, and just because, like you said, this is just one week between the two events in Vilnius and in Tallinn. And so we stopped a few days there, and it's a beautiful city. Nationalism is very much mainstream in Riga, and this is a medieval, beautiful city. And I did an interview with Jonas Locka in a restaurant there. I haven't posted the interview yet, but we talked a lot about what he's been doing in Finland. And he is a very interesting figure because, you know, some of our listeners might have seen him in the production of Happy Homelands, for example. He sometimes shows up on screen together with Tiina. But he is actually, and Tiina as well, they are a part of the city council in Oulu in North Finland, where they live. And they ran as independent candidates, so they're not part of any political party. And what he did that is perhaps the most interesting part about him and his work is that he uncovered and exposed a grooming scandal in North Finland, similar to the one in Rotherham. And the similarities aren't just that, you know, these are grooming scandals. The similarity is also that the state and the police and the media didn't really talk about it until they were forced to talk about it. So what happened with him was that people, concerned parents, came to him because he was, like I said, in the city council. And they said, and he had also has, you know, they have their live stream and they have their independent alternative media. And they said, my daughter was raped in a park, and the media is just completely silent about this. And what he did then, when he heard these stories and he was concerned, and yeah, very true, there weren't any stories in the mass media. So he, there is a principle of publicity in Finland. So you can ask for court documents, which he did. And so a lot of these there were migrants, obviously, who were arrested for these sexual assaults on young girls, underage girls in Finland, in North Finland, in this little town in North Finland. They were mostly, I think he said, a part of the migration wave that came in 2015. So a lot of Afghans and people from that part of the world. And the mass media didn't talk much about it, but when they really started putting pressure on this story and exposing this story, then all of a sudden the Finnish mass media had to start talking about it. So they exposed it, so it became a very well-known affair in Finland. And the other part was that there was one of these girls who committed suicide, and she was 14 years old. And I think there were more than one girl who committed suicide. But this particular girl committed suicide after being assaulted and raped by these migrants. And when the media heard about this, they started asking the police to confirm that this girl had committed suicide. But at first, the police were apparently covering that story up as well, because they lied to the media and said that I haven't heard any stories about a girl committing suicide. So what Yunus did then was that he called this policeman who had given this statement to the media, and he said, you know, at the next city council meeting, if you continue lying about this matter, I'm gonna expose you in your name to the public, so that they know that you're covering up a suicide in connection to this major rape scandal. So there again, he was able to force publicity onto this matter. So yeah, we did a conversation about that in a restaurant. We recorded a video interview. I haven't released the material yet because I haven't had time, but it's coming up in very soon. So that's really a very. Have you heard about this, Greg?
Oh yeah, I've followed this, and I think Yunus is doing wonderful work. I think he's very courageous. So I'm glad that you did this, and it's in English, so that'll give it a little bit more wide, you know, exposure. I look forward to the interview.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then we went on to Estonia.
Before you go into that, did you meet with any nationalists in Latvia?
No, we didn't really talk to any nationalists. There seems to be a strong connection between the Estonians and the Lithuanians, and the Latvians seem to be more on their own thing. I think they're friendly and all, but I get the impression, as an outsider at least, I get the impression that the Estonians and the Latvia and the Lithuanians, they cooperate more. Mm-hmm. So they organize things more together, because the Lithuanians had speakers from Estonia, and the Estonians had speakers from Lithuania, but none of them had from Latvia. Mm-hmm. So I think the Latvian nationalist movement is more on its own, you know.
Yeah, it's also larger and more mainstream there, perhaps.
Yeah, that's the impression I get. But like you said in the beginning, that these two independence days, they are just 1 week apart. They're both in February.
Right.
But the Latvian Independence Day and Nationalist Day is in November. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, the guests who go to Lithuania, they, will go to Estonia as well, but the Latvian one is, you know, is a few months earlier or later, depending on how you see it.
Right.
So it's not connected in the same way. But like you said, yeah, it's a very big thing in Latvia, and I've heard that it's around 20, 25, 30,000 people in that march.
That's impressive. Yeah.
I'm definitely planning on going there next time.
Yeah, I would like to go there too. I really enjoyed three marches that I went to. One was in Vilnius, and another was in Tallinn, the ones that you've attended. And then there was the huge 100th anniversary march in Warsaw, where more than 500,000 people showed up. That was truly remarkable.
That's insane.
Yeah, and that, I think, is a week ahead of the events in Riga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've actually never been to the one in Poland. I'd really love to go. But yeah, it's one of these things, you know, I try to go to as many of these events as I can, but I I can't go to all of them.
Yeah, well, you could probably do a similar thing in November where you go from Warsaw to Riga in a week,
yeah,
or a little more than a week. So
yeah, I was considering that. So that would be a lot of fun. And I did, I didn't meet them in Riga, but I met a lot of nationalists from Riga, in Estonia, for example.
Ah.
So although they weren't speakers, I talked to some of them, and they had their flag represented in their, you know, the march, the parade. So yeah, I definitely met some people from there.
Well, good. What was your impression of the city and the people? What was the feel of it in Riga?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, they have symbols that you wouldn't be able to have in Western
Germany,
Europe.
For instance, yes.
In Germany, for example, that you would get you thrown in jail. They have those everywhere, because it's a part of their national cultural expression. They have these patterns on all their sort of embroideries and in woodcuts and all kinds of stuff with a very traditional style that is very typical for the Baltic countries, and maybe especially Riga. You know, it's a very distinct, explicitly nationalist culture. And like I said, it's very much an ethno state. The only people who are not ethnically Lithuanian that you run into, Latvian, I'm sorry, that you run into in Riga are pretty much Russians.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to what we are used to, you know, when we go to London or Berlin or Paris, that isn't all that bad.
No, in 2017, I took a trip on a boat from Stockholm to Tallinn. And it so happened that it was a complete coincidence, but Kevin MacDonald was on the same boat as me, and so we hung out together. And the boat was filled with Russians from the Baltics doing stuff. There were contests and talent shows and stuff for kids. And so the entire boat was swarming with families with kids who were Russian-speaking from the Baltic states, maybe just Estonia, I don't know, but maybe multiple Baltic states. And it was very, very refreshing just to be around all these white families. It was a lot of fun. And I know there's ethnic conflict between Baltic Russians and the indigenous peoples there. I know I don't want to paper that over, but the fact is that for outsiders, it's really seems very homogeneous to us, right? And it was a pleasure just being on that boat for 24 hours or a little less and just hanging out with all these people. They just seemed like healthy, normal people. And it was a nice vacation. It was a nice vacation and a huge contrast from multicultural Stockholm, where you practically see no children at all.
Yeah. Some people have criticized this concept of white nationalism, we've talked about this. This is basically flogging a dead horse. But many people criticize the concept of white nationalism for being too American, for example, because Europe is more divided up into ethno states and with ethnic distinctions that are more subtle than just like a wider concept of a white race. But the fact of the matter is that nationalism now is a lot focused on people in a diaspora, because I go to other countries and identify with nationalists in England or in Germany or in France or in Portugal or Hungary or Latvia. And I just understand that we're a part of the same situation. We're facing the same problems, really, in the long run, as the people in South Africa. So really, these border conflicts, they are, in the grand scheme of things, less relevant. And I understand that they have a long history of border conflicts, and well, the gods know that definitely Western Europe has had its fair share of war between neighboring countries, two world wars being just a couple of examples, right? But I don't think that those conflicts should cloud our judgment today, because we are really facing a threat of being displaced and dispossessed by people from other continents right now.
Right.
Exactly. So I really can't take sides in these conflicts between Ukrainians and Russians or Estonians and Russians. I just have to tell them, people on both sides that I talk to, that, you know, I'm a supporter of nationalism, and I can't really pick sides between the two of you, because it's not really my issue to do so. And I really just want to convey the message that I think we face a far bigger threat that we have to focus on right now. So, Riga is a fantastically beautiful city. It's a few years ago, if you went there, it was super cheap, but it's slowly sort of creeping up to standard Western prices. It definitely isn't there yet, but it isn't like ridiculously cheap as it was maybe 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's getting more and more expensive, especially in the touristy areas in these old towns where, people with more money come from across the Baltic Sea in Sweden, for example, to party for a weekend or something like that.
Right. So you went on from Riga to Tallinn. So yeah. Tell us about the conference there and your experience at the march, and also the various interviews that you did.
Yeah, that was probably the most interesting part in a way, because it's a bigger event, and it's organized by this organization that's called Blue Awakening. So this was on the 23rd was the conference, and on the 24th. Was the actual Independence Day with the march and everything. So on the 23rd, I was a speaker at this conference called Ethno Future. And it's the fourth conference that they have put on with that name. And it's organized by this organization called Blue Awakening. And Blue Awakening is a sort of youth wing, or a metapolitical youth organization under the sort of a youth party of ECRE, which is a government party. So that is a very interesting thing. I mean, this is basically organized by the metapolitical wing of a government party. So I was a speaker there. One mayor from Hungary was a speaker. He is the mayor of this city in on the border toward Serbia, that made this video. You remember that video? It came out maybe in 2014 or 15, when they said that they sent a message to migrants, basically, that Hungary is a bad choice for you, and this city especially is a bad choice for you.
Oh, yeah. His name is Laszlo Toroskai, and the town is Ashotalam. I thought it was a fantastic video. It was very well made, slick.
Yeah, it's very radical. So he was a speaker, and he is, like I said, he is the mayor of this town, and this quite small town in Hungary. And what he said that, when I saw this migrant crisis coming, the Hungarian state didn't really want to stop all the migrants coming over the border. So I decided to take it upon myself as mayor, because apparently the mayor has a right in Hungary to basically form a militia or like an armed band to protect the border, which he did. And he said that first they had these people patrolling the border, and then they demanded a fence, and then they demanded a second line to the fence, basically. So it's a two part thing. So you can be stuck in between the fences. It's two fences protecting the border. And they got people from all over, from Poland and other parts of Europe, to help them patrol this border to stop the migrants coming in. And they have also put electricity in the fence. So now they have, they have full protection there, and they're patrolling it. And with what's going on now in Turkey, who knows, maybe it'll become very useful again.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was in 2015.
The reaction, the reaction to the migrant wave that the Turks are sending today is so different from what happened in 2015. And
yeah.
It's very, very encouraging. A lot of the work that our people have done has paid off.
Oh, yes.
I would love it if this were just stopped at the Greek border. If they stop it at the Greek border, that's wonderful. That's a victory. That's what we're aiming for. If it's not stopped, if the EU intervenes, if NATO intervenes, if these globalist institutions and NGOs start getting these people into Europe, that's good too, because that's just going to drive people to the right. It's going to drive people to national populists. It's going to create a stronger consensus against this kind of stuff happening in the future. So this is a win-win situation for us, and it's nice to have win-win situations.
Yeah, I agree completely, because there is really, from now on, there is really no way that national populism will decrease, will go down. We will only gain more people and more intelligent people, and the left and the sort of globalism will only attract weirder and stranger and really less powerful people. So I do think that we are seeing something like a power shift coming up on the horizon, because things are just so bad that the bad guys can't really cover it up, and when they try to cover it up, it just makes them look bad. they try to everyone has probably seen these videos when they try to create these pictures very much like the island, the boy who was on the beach, and the picture that just made rounds around the world in 2014 or 15, that sort of was a big part of the propaganda offensive connected to the migrant crisis in those years. And when they've tried to take pictures similar to that and, pinch children and hold them over the fire and so on to get them to cry so that they will get their good propaganda pictures. Well, now a lot of people are actually, filming these things with their mobile phones and putting them on social media.
Yeah. Yeah. They can't control the narrative like they used to. There was some footage of these Soros affiliated NGO types trying to stage what looked like a drowning incident for propaganda. And this was all being caught on film and put out there. Mm-hmm. They're melting down. They really are melting down because they cannot control the narrative on this like they did less than 5 years ago. And that's real progress for us. And like mm-hmm. I said, if these people get in, it's going to be good for us too. So we've either won, or if we don't win now, we're going to be able to turn this to our advantage and have a stronger victory in the future. But really, the tendency is very positive now.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's like the same thing they did with what's her name? Cortez, the American politician, when she was crying on the Mexican border. And
oh, Ocasio-Cortez, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was also trying to stage these propaganda photos, but then when you saw it from another angle, she was just crying, looking at like an empty parking field or something.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, they were exposed. Anyhow, back to the event. So, yeah, that Hungarian guy, he is also the leader of a new Hungarian party, a relatively new Hungarian party, which is called Mi Hazánk. many people probably recognize the name of Jobbik, which is a nationalist party in Hungary that was very much a topic in the news a few years back. But what happened was apparently, I mean, I don't know the sort of details of this, but apparently they went more to the left and abandoned national populism as an ideology, so that the nationalists in Jobbik, they just left the party and started a proper nationalist party instead. And that is Miho Zank, as far as I understand. And so moving on, he gave a speech. And then also a guy called Toni Jalonen gave a speech. And that was also interesting. And I actually interviewed him about this, because he gave a speech. He is the vice chairman of the youth wing of the True Finns party. So the True Finns is a national populist party in Finland, a very mild version of national populism, but still. And he is the vice chairman of that party, the youth wing of that party. And he gave a speech, and he said explicitly that he is a fascist. Mm-hmm. I have to say that the True Finns, or the Finns Party, as it's called now, they changed their name. They are the biggest party in Finland currently. So they are around 25%. Which is the same size as the Sweden Democrats. And I hope I got those figures correct, because I think that's what he told me. I mean, I'm obviously the language barrier to Finland is is such that I can't directly follow Finnish politics. But he told me in the interview that they are the biggest party in the polls currently, and they are sort of on the same line as the Sweden Democrats. It's a big party, but they were very upset that he said that in fact he's a fascist. He identifies himself as a fascist in this speech, so that immediately his phone started ringing after he had delivered the speech in the evening and the day after, because it was live streamed, so you know his friends at home could follow his speech while it was going on, and this became a huge news story in Finland, that the vice chairman of this youth party, that he called himself a fascist. So they want to kick him out of the party. I think it's still an ongoing process, but I did interview him, and it's on YouTube now. That interview is actually published. So, that's an interesting development. And he gave a very good speech. He's a very charming. It was his first speech, but he was a very charming guy. And I think he understands the right principles of, you know, never backing down, never adapting to the leftist narrative and apologizing to them and so on. So that was a very good one. And then there was a very young girl called Gemma Bernadette Kitz, who talked about jawharp nationalism. The jawharp is a very old, primitive instrument that she associates with, you know, a sort of a cultural connection to the past. And she gave a speech. She's only 15 years old, very intelligent girl. And I mean, instead of me talking more about her, I people can just watch my interview. It's on YouTube. It's on the Skanza Forum channel. So I interviewed her we talked a bit about her spiritual reawakening, and because she came from a Catholic family, and then she started to identify more with nationalism and with the pre-Christian faith that is still alive in Estonia, and we had a really good chat, and I think she is she seems to be a very good role model for young women interested in metapolitics, or just the cultural situation generally. And then Ruben Kaalep was one of the speakers, and he is a member of parliament in Estonia, and I did an interview with him as well. Now, he talked about, they got into parliament last year, I believe, so he's been a member of parliament for almost exactly a year by now, and he's very young. I think he's 26. And he was the former leader of this organization called Blue Awakening, as far as I can tell. And he's a very intelligent guy, and he's very much focused on metapolitics, on the cultural struggle and the struggle for for the imagination and for the heart of the people. And his speeches are always very much, shall we say, poetically charged. They're very poetical. They always have like a very emotional dimension to them. Mm-hmm. And I think he understands that part of the struggle a lot. You know Ruben as well, right?
Oh, yeah. I've known him since 2015. I met him at the London Forum, actually, and I mm-hmm. interviewed him then. And I think it was at that time that I interviewed him. He was, you know, just involved in the student movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him a question just sort of almost tongue-in-cheek about what he would do if he became like the prime minister or something of Estonia. And it was very funny because he took it completely in earnest. Mm. And he said, well, I hadn't thought of becoming prime minister, but maybe part of the cabinet or something. And I let him run with it because I realized that in Estonia, that wasn't a joke.
Yeah.
In America, it would be sort of transparently a joke. Mm-hmm. And for Ruben, it wasn't. And so it didn't surprise me at all that he finally got into parliament. Mm-hmm. And someday maybe he will be in the cabinet. He's a fine person. I've met him a number of times mm-hmm. at various conferences. He came to the United States and spoke at American Renaissance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In America, my Facebook friends are... A lot of them are marginal people when I had Facebook, right? A lot of them are marginal people. We're on the outside. Let's just put it that way. American white nationalists who are my friends are on the outside. And in Eastern Europe, my Facebook friends are in the parliament. It's a huge difference in terms of what's politically possible.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And it's very impressive. Like I said, he's been a member of parliament now for a year. So the government of Estonia is a coalition government for different parties going together to form a government. And so ECRE has the party that Ruben is a part of and that, you know, whose youth wing Blue Awakening organized this conference, this metapolitical conference. They have, I think, 4 or 5 ministers in the government. And one of those ministers was actually a speaker at the conference. So I spoke alongside the Minister of Finance. So the Minister of Finance in Estonia was a speaker at the conference. He gave a very short speech, but it was very interesting because he said very explicitly that I forget exactly the words, but he basically said that throughout the West or throughout the what I would call the white world, I don't think he said the white world, but let's say the West, throughout the West, there is a grand conflict going on between nationalism and globalism. And he said that, he said things like, you should never back, like when the leftists start screaming about, you know, complaining and want you to back down from your word and apologize and be apologetic, you should just crank up the volume and make them scream more, you know. So I mean, this is the attitude of the guy, and they are very unapologetically, it's a very serious party. It's a very serious party, and they have very intelligent people, but they are not these kinds of apologetic people. I mean, I understand that I keep coming back to that word because that's what describes national populists in the West, in Sweden, in Norway, and to some extent in Denmark, and definitely in, you know, in France and so on. They always try to adapt to the leftist narrative so that they will be accepted and, you know, get a pat on the back for being good boys.
Right.
And that is the attitude that I really hate. And that's so refreshing to see that these guys who have come into, you know, the real centers of power of their country, they take their mission seriously and they actually believe their own message. And that's what's important. So, and I asked him a question. I raised my hand when his speech was over and he opened up for questions. So I raised my hand and I said, so what you're saying, which I, you know, think is just commonsensical, but it would be pretty much impossible to say in Scandinavia. So and pretty much in the rest of the EU is like, because it's so liberal. So how have you been received? What have the reactions been in the EU, in the surrounding countries and so on? How have you been received? And he said that and this was very interesting to me, he said that in the EU, they have just treated him very respectfully and they've just accepted him and his party because they have been basically forced to accept that national populism is here to stay. It's not a fad that's going away tomorrow. And he also said, you know, he's very thankful to Poland and to Hungary for, you know, taking the brunt of the attack from the liberal side. So that now it's basically just a fait accompli that we have national populism and it's here to stay. I just found that very encouraging. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, I agree. In fact, the talk I gave there last year was on the topic of why national populism is here to stay, and I definitely think it is.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
very heartening to visit these Baltic countries. The people there are very bright. They're very yeah. high quality. They're very good-looking people. Mm-hmm. And the countries have come a long way from communism.
Yeah.
They were immiserated under communism for decades and decades, and they never probably really recovered from World War II in a lot of ways. And since independence, they've become very prosperous places, and they're going to become basically Western
yeah.
in their standard of living, which is fine, and that's all good. We want people to be comfortable and have decent medical care and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, they haven't been Westernized in their mentality yet, and that's very, very important. And I hope that they can hold on to their distinctness and not lose it. The East tends to be very, very humble, I think, in a lot of ways. A lot of your average person in Central and Eastern Europe in the former communist bloc has a real inferiority complex towards the West. And they really need to get over that because soon they're going to have everything that's good about the West. And if they're lucky, they won't have imported any of the bad stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what's so impressive. I was on Red Ice last week. I forget which day it was, but just a few days ago, I was on Red Ice, maybe a week ago. And Henrik, who is, of course, Swedish, and I grew up in Sweden, so we have the same you know, points of reference really in our perception of the world around us because we have many of the same experiences. And what we talked about was that we both remember, you know, in maybe the 80s or the 90s when in Scandinavia, in Sweden, particularly maybe, the Baltic states, Estonia and Lithuania and Latvia were viewed as kind of backwards in a way because they were poor. They were a lot poorer than Scandinavia, and they weren't really taken seriously. Unfortunately, I mean, I'm just describing reality here. So that you know, there's always the risk that when you come from a position when you come from a weak position, when you have from an economically weak position, you might just be tempted to embrace everything that the West has to offer. But that's what's been so impressive to me, that they have a metapolitical movement going. Because the day after the conference was the day of the torch lit march. And on the earlier on in the day, the torch march is in the evening. So earlier on in the day, Ruben took me and a couple of friends to just do a private tour of the parliament. And so we went there and we went through the security check and everything. And the parliament was just completely empty because this is their national holiday and everyone is off from work. So it was empty. So we had the whole parliament building to ourselves. We walked around and then we sat down in one of the very sort of big, impressive rooms. And we did an interview in the parliament with Ruben, who is a member of parliament. So, you know, this is just like the comparison to what we have in other parts of the world, what nationalists have. So we did a very good interview, and it's coming out. We're just doing the final touches on it in terms of editing. It's coming out maybe tomorrow, maybe on the weekend. We'll see. But it's coming out very soon. And anyhow, I asked him these questions. You already have nationalism. So what motivates you? What's the driving force of you being so active in a metapolitical movement for nationalism? I mean, you might as well rest on your laurels. You know, you already have what we really want to have. So why all this struggle? And he said, you know, well, we see what's going on in the West, and we've always been stuck between, you know, big empires in the West and in the East, and we've always had to fight for our independence. And we see what's going on in the EU and throughout the West. And if we're not prepared to fight for our country, the same thing is going to happen to us. So they are very intelligent and very much aware of what's going on around them.
Yeah, that's very heartening. So how was the march itself?
So the march itself was maybe slightly smaller than last year. Last year they had about 10,000 people in the march. Maybe it was about 8,000 now, I don't know. But it was still, you know, a huge march. And it's a mainstream thing. Like I said, it's organized by a government party. It's just when you look at it from above, when you stand there, when you go up on the platform and just look at the crowd of people with torches, it blows your mind, really. And it's old people, it's young people, it's families with children, and they're singing nationalist songs. And there were maybe three protesters, so three people screaming, and I think it sounded like an American tourist who was there, and he was screaming, "It's the current year, it's 2020 already."
You know, well,
it's a meme.
Yeah, I was there last year, and it was a beautiful experience. And there might have been six or eight protesters at one point, very confused looking people on a hillside. So there are fewer protesters too. So
yeah, indeed. Yeah, it is, and everyone could see how ridiculous they look, because they like leftists always do. They dressed up in some clown costumes when they were standing there with their signs to get some attention, because they're, you know, they need attention. And they're just ridiculous. So it's a very mainstream thing. And that's another aspect, you know, of this conference and just this country, generally speaking, because I've often said that, you know, when I get asked, what is nationalism? What is it you want with nationalism? And I say, you know, it's a nationalist country is a country where you don't really have to lock your front door, lock your car, and where you can trust your neighbors, because they're a part of the same people, really. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to have this big cosmopolitan police state controlling everything, because it's not necessarily, because you have the natural foundation for harmony in a society, and that is ethnic homogeneity. I mean, that's just a fact. And that was illustrated when this Minister of Finance, this member of the government came to give a speech at this event with, you know, us and maybe some 80, 90 people in attendance. He didn't come in an armored truck with a dozen bodyguards. He just came by himself, because it's a high trust society and it's a normal society, you know, and it's a safe country. And that's what you can have. And that's, I think, the most important message, because what is nationalism? Well, nationalism is a society where you can have that, where it's just a normal society. And it isn't, you know, people always, when they criticize us, and sometimes a lot of, you know, people who are on our side just, you know, they take the bait to try to marginalize themselves by putting up these weird descriptions of what nationalism is, and these basically autistic, esoteric, you know, theories. Mm-hmm. But really, nationalism is what all of us had, like, in the 70s or 80s in all of the West. That's the kind of country you could have in Sweden or Norway in the 80s. Or 70s. So this is just like a normal situation. That's what you know, but we had that when we and our parents grew up. And the only thing we want is for our children to have the same possibility to have that kind of country again.
Exactly. A nice white country.
Yeah, yeah. It's just super impressive. I just love going to those countries. And it's like, you know, what is nationalism? What is nationalism? And as, you know, seeing is always believing, you know. It's like, you know, show, don't tell. So instead of giving some esoteric description of something, you just, well, go to Estonia and see what nationalism is. That's the kind of country I want.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nationalists want only one thing, and it's absolutely disgusting. And then, and then you show a picture of Tallinn with snow falling and kids playing in the snow and things like that. It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, Frody, this has been great. And I'm sure next year when coronavirus has died down and everything and people are traveling again, there'll probably be a few more nationalists showing up in these places. When I was there in Tallinn last year, one of the things that I really enjoyed was meeting a bunch of nationalists from Italy, from Flanders, mm-hmm. and from... also from Finland, who had come over. And they weren't part of our group or anything, but we just happened to be at the same restaurant, and there they were. Yeah. And they were really fine people. And I love how that happens. You've got people who want to go around and celebrate the independence of other European peoples.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the ridiculous thing, you know, when people say, oh, nationalism is impossible. It's a pipe dream. Well, we have nationalist countries, and it doesn't cause conflict like the leftists always claim. Instead, it attracts nationalists from other countries who just want to support each other, you know, in their efforts.
Exactly, exactly. The most broad-minded and pan-European people I know are actually ethno-nationalists in Europe. They're the ones who are going around and celebrating the independence of all these different European nations.
Yeah, certainly.
Well, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate this. And we will definitely, well, you're a regular fixture in Counter Currents Radio anyway, so it's hardly a big promise to say that we'll have you back soon. But anyway, when you're back from your travels, let's definitely catch up, and we'll see you again soon.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.